This is the podcast for Monday, January 9th, 2012. Theories of Knowledge, Philosophy 202. So this is our first class session. So we're going to talk briefly about the course requirements in the syllabus, which is available on Moodle at classes.lanecc.edu. Moodle is our online course system at Lane, in case you're not familiar with it. And it works like Blackboard and WebCT. And if you need help with that, there's a student help desk. And where are they at now? Are they still in the help building, a.k.a. building 4? It's in the syllabus, which you have to go through Moodle to get to. Tell you what, you go to lanecc.edu and click on the link that says Moodle there, and all the courses that you have that have Moodle sections associated with it, just click on your class and you're there. And there's online help there and everything. So just click Moodle and you can log in with your L number and PIN and log into Moodle and read the syllabus by Wednesday at the latest before class here. And just to briefly go over the requirements, in case you're thinking about running out of the room right now, or maybe while you're sitting at your desk there with your iPad or Android or whatever and dropping the class and heading out the back door, I'll just give you the course requirements such as they are. So there'll be three exams, each worth 30% of the course, and they're going to be true, false, multiple choice, no essays, no papers. This is an introductory class, lower division class. You will have to do some writing of the forms. So there are 10 weekly forms, and these are worth 10%. 10% is a letter grade, so don't space on this. And this is particularly important for students who are in the hybrid section. You're used to coming to class, you're used to doing things in class, maybe you got your book, you read the stuff we're talking about in the book, and you're like, oh yeah, then there's that Moodle thing I'm supposed to do before Sunday. And Monday morning rolls around and you're about to walk in the classroom door and you're like, oh no, I forgot to do the forum. So don't let that be you. I'll have one opportunity to make up a missed forum during the final exam week. Actually, in week 10, there'll be an extra credit forum, which will benefit you if you miss one of these forums. But these are sort of, I think about these sort of being like attendance or homework. I don't grade these, so if you do it, if you put forth a conscientious effort, which means that you post at least 100 words or on the topic, and you post before the deadline, you get the point. And so those 10 points add up, so particularly if you're between grades, it could be the difference between two grades, or even it might even be a full letter grade, depending on where in the scale you are. So, and also, if you're between grades, and I look at your forum posts, and I see that you did like 4 posts, I'm like, oh, this person, they're not really trying. This is like an easy A for the forum posts. And I'm not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. If I see you like you got a 10 there, you're almost up on that B plus or whatever it is, I'm more likely to give you the benefit of the doubt. So so apart from like the official mathematical figuring in, I see the forms as sort of an effort, as a gauge of your effort in the course. It's a measurable gauge where I can see how responsible you are, how engaged you are in the class, and how often you say, oh, this is my responsibility to just write 100 words on one of the class topics for the week and post at the forum, and I've got like till Sunday to do it. And if you can't do that, it's like, well, I don't feel very charitable. So those are due every Sunday before 11:55 p.m., which means like if you press that button at 11:55 p.m., you're late. If you press the button at 11:54 and 45 seconds, maybe it'll reach the server before 11:55 p.m. Maybe it won't. Moodle can be kind of slow sometimes. Also, if you're going to type, I say please don't type anything like super long, like 300, 400, 500 words. Particularly not 500 words is way too much. That's like a paper. And try to be clear and succinct. You might write something longer and like edit it down or something. And also, don't write too little. So if you're in doubt, run it through a word count tool on online. You search for a word count tool, or go to wordcounttool.com, right? And there it is, and you just paste your text in there, press a button, see how many words it is, or use Microsoft Word, because I, you know, if because it's so bare bones, you know, if you post 80, 90 words, I'm going to say, well, that's nothing. Particularly, it's like, well, people made a lot of good points about this knowledge stuff in class this week, and I'm not really sure. I think there's truth in all the different views, and because everybody's sort of right in their own way, you know. That's not going to, this thing can't. Also, don't copy the questions. The questions are at the top of the thread, so don't try to pad your word count by copying the questions. And don't need to put, like, question number two. Don't put your name in the post, because in a forum, for those of you unfamiliar with online forums, your name already shows up. There's a little picture there. If you could upload a picture of some kind, too, that would be helpful. It would help you learn names. Or if you're shy about your picture and you want to put a picture of a flaming skull or whatever, you know, represents the true you, feel free to do that. But I hate seeing these generic smileys that they put in Moodle. They're not very aesthetically pleasing. So, you know, do something fun and just go to images.google.com and find an image there that you can use and just upload it to your profile. So don't put your name in the posts. I'm thinking of all the annoying things that people were doing last term that I had to remind them of. Don't put your name in the post. Don't write like 500 words. Don't write 400 words. 300. If it's epic, maybe, you know, once in the term, all right. But just try to keep it to 200, 250, something like that. That's like 250 words of the double spaced page. And keep in mind too that there's 40 students in this section, and so 40 people are going to see your post. Also, you know, do a spell check. You know, use capital letters at the beginning of sentences. If you're using your phone, you know, use a swipe technology or something, or get a. $25-$30 at Walmart. I got taken to the cleaners by Apple that wanted $70 for this thing. Holy moly! So, but you know, $25 for a keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard, so you don't have to type with your thumbs. So, you know, I don't want something that looks like you typed it with your thumbs. I want capital letters. I want punctuation. I want the word spelled correctly. I want proper grammar. So if I see these posts sometimes, and I'm like, oh, these poor ESL students, or what's the word now? They still use ESL? English people whose first language isn't English, is that the current designation? Yeah. They always change these acronyms. So I'm like, oh, this is like some, you know, one of the international students. So my heart goes out to them. And I see, you know, Brad Johnson or something like that. And it's written as like pidgin English. I'm like, holy. So, you know, I know, I recognize them. Most of you went to the government schools. And so, you know, you might not have been adequately prepared for college. But you make a concerted effort to use proper grammar and punctuation as much as you're able. And if it's just abysmal, I reserve the right to not give you credit. Besides that, you're going to embarrass yourself in front of the whole class. So, you know. On the other hand, you know, don't worry about, like, I don't want to, like, scare you off about, like, posting something provocative or interesting or being overly worried about what people will think about you and in your post, you know. And some people have a lot of social anxiety, so you don't want to go the other way and just sort of worry about if it's making some controversial claim and people jumping on you. And on the other hand, don't jump on people and make controversial claims. You can argue with them, but don't, be nice about it, right? You can learn to agree with other people, disagree with other people agreeably. So use common courtesy and respect. No name calling. Don't call people stupid or idiots. And if someone just, you know, gives a position, don't call their position, idiotic. So I want, you know, people to be courteous. Even if you think the person's view is idiotic, you know, say it in a nice way. Use words, you know, good philosophical words like absurd or implausible or something like that. Or internally inconsistent or whatever the appropriate, you know, use like a descriptive word. Just don't say that's a load of BS or something like that. So, Anyway, so just, you know, I got some of the stuff's common sense, but I want to warn you ahead of time. Occasionally I get people who lack, you know, basic social skills, or who are, what's the word for it? I don't know, I have volatile or acerbic personalities. What?
Tactless.
Yeah, the tactless. Excellent. All excellent descriptions, yeah. So don't be that person, because I don't want to have to, like, you know, give you a stern warning or something. It's uncomfortable for everybody. And then I have to go in and, like, modify or delete your post or something and tell you to post something nice. So, okay, so that's the forum posts. Again, I'll have the topics up. There's a problem. I need to put everybody in groups. And my student assistant's supposed to be doing that, and she hasn't done it yet. So I'm going to contact her after class to ask her why she hasn't done it yet. But as soon as everybody's in groups, you'll be able to post to the forum. And I'm hoping that's going to be this afternoon or this evening. Yeah.
If you're not added to the class yet.
Yeah, so then you also the same deal. After you're added to the class, then you'll have to be put in a group. Then you'll be able to post. For people that get added late, that's the only time where I'd like give you a pass for posting late. If you're not able to do it, just contact me if you can. Yeah.
Oh, other than that, is there going to be like every Monday for the Moodle thing? We should just like look on it.
Yeah. So every Monday, I'll say they'll be up by class. I usually try to get them up like in the morning or late Sunday night. Today I didn't do it because I figured nobody's in groups, so nobody's going to be able to post anyway. And but they should be up this afternoon. But I'll try. Each week I try to get them up by a class time. Yeah.
Is testing still done?
Yeah, still in the testing lab. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, thanks. So testing. There are three exams. This includes the final exam, by the way. So two midterms and a final, and they'll be you'll have about a week to do them. 4 days for the final. And that'll be in Center 456 Testing Lab at top of the stone steps across from Language, Literature, and Communication. You just go in there and show them a picture ID and give them your L number and PIN, and type in your PIN, and they log in and take the test on the computer there and get your score immediately. Still, as far as I know, you can't review the test in the lab, so you'll have to come by office hours if you want to see what you got wrong. I'm still needling the people in that run Moodle about why that's like important to me and why, you know, it makes no sense to have a proctored testing lab if students can get the answers anyplace in the world. And for some reason, Moodle can't restrict the IP list to the lab. And so if I set it so that you can see your answers after taking the test, then you can see your answers in the lab, and you can see your answers at home, and then people copy the answers and pass them on to your friends, and it gives them an unfair advantage. So still working on that. Let's see. The test won't be any surprises. It'll be the basic things we talk about in class, basic concepts, the names of particular philosophers and what their views were, arguments pro and con on the various issues, definitions and terms. And so some of them will be just sort of rote memorization. Some will require you to apply a concept to a particular issue, or require you to like identify a quote from one of the philosophers, and they're not going to be obscure quotes. They'll be like things that encapsulate the person's philosophy. So that sort of thing. And I'll have I think they're actually up there right now. There's some sample questions. I give you like five sample questions from the test, some of which actually may appear on the test. And I may try to give you some more sample questions or expand my test bank this term. So I'm supposed to start out with just a broad definition of philosophy. Philosophy is an attempt to understand the world through the systematic use of reason. Since for many of you this will be your first philosophy class, philosophy is an understanding of the world, or we could say knowledge of the world through the systematic application of reason. So what distinguishes philosophy from other fields is that it's, or say, how is it different from, say, some people say, well, how is philosophy different from religion or theology? Well, in religion and theology, you're making arguments based on tradition or based on faith. And in philosophy, you're using logic and reason and the evidence of the senses to come to conclusions. Some people might say, well, that sounds like science. Well, philosophy, you might see, is the most general of the fields of knowledge, because since all that defines philosophy is the use of reason, you could say that could apply to logic, mathematics, science, and both the hard sciences like physics and the soft science like psychology. But then there's some other stuff that maybe isn't science. So you have different philosophies of, so philosophy of blank, philosophy of religion. So philosophy of religion is different than studying religion itself, in that you're trying to use reason to understand religion, as opposed to approaching it from the standpoint of with a presupposition of faith. Or you might have philosophy of science. And so philosophy of science is sort of a metafield which tries to figure out, okay, well, what is science? What defines science? What is scientific method, and is it a reliable way to get to the truth? Or if it is, why is it reliable? And you can have a philosophy of mind, which asks questions like, what is the nature of the soul? Do we have a soul? If the mind is just the brain, why does it seem like it has different properties? Does your brain has weight and mass and temperature and all these physical properties? But it seems like ideas have other qualities, like ideas can be abstract or concrete. A neuron can't be abstract or concrete. So what's the distinction between the mind and the brain, if there is one? And if there isn't one, why does it seem like there is one? So in philosophy, you can use a philosophical approach or the philosophical method to really any field. And I think about it as being sort of the king of the sciences, as it were. In medieval philosophy, theology was seen as the queen of the sciences. So it's thought there's theology up here, and then there's all the different branches of learning underneath it. My way of thinking about philosophy as being sort of this super science or a theory of everything, where what you're trying to do is integrate the findings from psychology and physics and the study of religion and literature. There's philosophy of literature. Bring your knowledge from all these different fields together, from economics, from psychology, from political science, and sort of form them into what you might call a worldview. And a worldview is a systematic view of the world which can help you make judgments about true and false, and I suppose also good and evil. So if you have a worldview, it's a view about different categories of knowledge and what there is in the world and what's right and wrong. And if it's a rational worldview, it agrees with the evidence of the senses. It's internally consistent. It matches up with reality. And so that's the goal of philosophy, is to get to the truth about the world. So if that's what philosophy is, then the question is, how do you get to the truth about the world? And what is truth? So let's just, one of the fields of philosophy, so you have philosophy of, and sometimes it's called theory of, so you have theory of knowledge. Or, in this class, it's called theories of knowledge, because there's not just one theory of knowledge, there's a bunch of different competing theories of knowledge. And so theory of knowledge is one of the branches of philosophy, which asks, what is knowledge, and how do we get it? And are there some things maybe we can't know? And if there's some things that we can never know, How can we know that we can never know them? Right, so so any question that has to do with knowledge is what's called epistemology. So the first, you know, 50-cent word you'll have to know from the test, epistemology. And this class might very well be called epistemology, if not for, you know, the department chair worrying about it and seeking enrollments. So we call it theories of knowledge. The other course that philosophy 203 used to be called metaphysics, and that was changed for a different reason. It thought, well, that would probably make it really popular, but it might be seen as false advertising because people would think that they go there, they're going to like talk about their past lives or, you know, how to read tarot cards or something like that, or the stuff you get in a metaphysical bookstore. So metaphysics and epistemology, M&E, are like the two, the sort of the bread and butter of philosophy, along with the ethics. So epistemology, theory of knowledge, and theory of knowledge is just has questions about what is the nature of knowledge, how do we obtain it, does it come primarily through reason, or does it come primarily through the senses, some combination, if so, which is more important, or revelation. And so we'll talk about the faith versus reason controversy. Or maybe, you know, there's some such thing as intuitive knowledge, which doesn't come through the senses, doesn't come through reason and logic, but it's some other means of knowing things. And we'll talk briefly about that as well. Okay. Questions so far? Well, let's jump right into it then. So, knowledge is something about truth, isn't it?
No.
No?
Not knowledge about truths.
Okay, well, you have a knowledge about an untruth. Like, what would be an example of an untruth?
The sky is green.
The sky is green, right? And you know, when you say, I know the sky, when you say, I know the sky isn't green, is that statement about truth or is it about untruth?
Untruth.
Both, because you know it's not true, but it's also about the truth that it is blue.
Okay, right. So I think that when you say, like, it's, well, just, I'm trying to think of the best way to approach this. You might say, like, I know the sky is not green. There's another way of saying, I know, that's when you say you know the sky is not green, that's another way of saying that you have a knowledge about what isn't the case, and that's the truth about the world too. So in other words, it's true. I know it is true that the sky is not green. Right? So when you say you know that something X, it's really short enough for saying you know it's true that X. So some of the things you know are things about what isn't true. So I know there's not a Santa Claus, or for example. And so that's an example of what's not true. Now, what does it mean to say that something's true? I'm sorry with that. When you say X is true, what does that mean?
I expect there to be evidence behind it.
Yeah,
it's supportable by reality.
Okay, so one person says supportable. Supportable by reality, what does that mean?
Sense reality, something you can see, taste, touch, smell.
Okay, so that's a little different. Reality is the way the world really is, right? But your senses are sort of what, how things, you know, that they're how things seem to you. Like sometimes your senses mislead you. What would you take heart in?
So if you're colorblind and you see blue as green, and this guy really is green, right? To you it is. So.
Well, actually, there is blue-green colorblind confusion, but I don't know it's the case that people with that colorblindness actually see a different color. They just can't distinguish between two colors. But let's say it is for the sake of argument. It depends on what it means for something to be green. If you define green as a subjective experience, then you might say he sees the sky as green. But most people think about green as being, this is one of these funny qualities that we'll talk about actually when we come to Locke. Greenness is sort of the way objects affect us, and us meaning people with normal color receptors. So green is kind of a weird quality in that it's part what the light waves are doing, but part of it is the way the human eye works. And by the human eye, I mean like the human eye working in standard operations, not someone who has a non-standard vision. Yeah?
If something is true, then it should be self-evident, and then other people can interact and take the vision.
That's an interesting claim. Let's see. Self-evident. Okay, are there some truths that aren't self-evident?
Some of them are.
But should be able to arrive at that same conclusion.
We landed on the moon.
Is that... Well, it's just nothing there.
I have no proof.
By the senses, self-evident. Well, is that really what truth is, or is that something else? Like, there's some truths that nobody knows, except maybe God, if there is a God.
Well, unless you fly to space and land on the moon, you'll never really know.
Well, I don't know.
It's not self-evident because you haven't done it. You can't prove it to yourself unless you're an astronaut.
Well, I think there are things that I know that I've never... Like, I've never been to Paris, but I believe Paris exists. I mean, you have to be, like, a really hardcore skeptic to say, no, I don't think Paris exists.
Just an example.
Right. But I'm saying the same thing with the moon landing. So that seems like a too high a bar, right? I won't believe that the moon exists or that... unless I actually land there. Or that it's possible to go to the moon unless I've done it myself. That seems kind of... I mean, there's some people that might say that, but, yeah.
How about something simple, like a friend telling you that particular person over there is a thief? I mean, it could be true, but...
Yeah, you might know, like, you know... John is a thief. Or John is cheating on his wife, or whatever, right? You don't know. They just point to this guy, and he looks kind of shady. He's got kind of beady eyes, but you never know. He could be an honest guy. Maybe he's got like a visual impairment that causes his eyes to dart back and forth. I remember one time, like appearances can be deceiving. I remember one time I had ridden the bus in the longest time, and my car broke down. I'm like, oh, I guess it's a cruiser. And so I'm like, standing at the bus stop, and I see this young man. He's got like his hair sort of slicked back, and he's got like a little briefcase. And he's wearing like a suit coat, you know, and no tie. And I think he actually had a tie, and it was like in his hand or something like that. Like he's, you know, was rushing to get dressed, and he's sitting there waiting. He's got kind of nice looking watch there. I'm thinking, oh, well, maybe, you know, this isn't going to be so bad. It's, you know, it's a professional businessman come there. So as I'm waiting there, this short little yellow school bus pulls up the curb, and this guy says, hi, Mr. Bus Driver. And he's like riding the short bus, and this the mentally impaired guy who, like, I guess, you know, likes dressing smart for... Yeah, just because he who knows why? It might just be he's trying to be like his dad or something like that. But like this guy, I think he was probably like 25, but yeah, seemed to have the mentality of of an 8-year-old. And so, you know, but I was, you know, the appearances was like, oh, this is some professional person waiting for the city bus when he was mentally impaired, you know, developmentally disabled adult, not like a lawyer. He was like, you know, a person, and he was being supported by the state. And so it's like, but it was weird that like I looked at him and I thought, oh, you know, maybe riding the bus won't be so bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I could even say if I ran into you on the street, I'd be like, dude, this guy looks homeless.
Well, there you go. That's what the public safety said when they see me leaving late. They see me leaving late at night and they're like, you know, no offense, but you look like a lot of the derelicts we have around here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, don't judge a book by its cover. So a couple of these things people have said about, you know, something being true. So if something be true without there being evidence to support it, take that first one.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, wait, so what would be an example?
The tree falls in the woods.
Yeah, if a tree falls in the that's the whole thing. If a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, doesn't make a sound. We'll actually get to that later when we talk about Barkley. Did a tree fall in the forest up there in the woods while class was going on? Well, who knows, right? What did Julius Caesar have for breakfast, on March 1st, 46 BC? Well, who knows? But he probably had something, or he didn't, right? There's some truth about what Caesar ate for breakfast March 1st, 46 BC, but we may never know what that is. Is there life on other planets? It might be that nobody knows that. There's the people see flying saucers and things. I don't want to get into that. But as far as like really, definitive proof of life on other planets, I think we're not quite there yet, even though there might be some interesting experiences people have. What else might be some unknowable things? I think that was knowable, actually. Good evidence for that. I mean, they had the stained blue dress.
Watergate.
Set of that. Yeah, what was on those that missing tape, right? The missing set, was it 17 minutes of tape? We'll probably never know that. Who were the real killers of Ron and Nicole? That's probably it. I think I know who the real killer is. So there are all these things that you might not know, but there's still some truth about them. So there's a distinction between truth and knowledge. Or truth versus, let's say, truth versus justification. Justification. So justification, when we talk about justification, this is talking about evidence or proof or support. And then truth, what's truth if it's something different than the evidence or justification? If a thing can be true without having evidence for it, what does it mean for something to be true?
Law?
What's that?
Your state?
Law?
I don't know. Faith, I think, is another, it's either some people see faith as a form of justification, or they see it as being no justification. But I mean, things can be true without like having faith in them, right? I mean, sometimes people have faith in things that are false. Like I had a friend who was like going out to buy a used car, and he was going out, he had this dream of this yellow car. And so as he's going out to look at these cars, he sees like this yellow, it's like an old like 1972 Datsun B210, and it's this bright yellow color, right? And he's like, it's a sign. It's I had this dream where I saw this yellow car, and he bought the car, and like literally the next day the transmission went out of the thing, and he bought it as is, and sure enough, it was a lemon, right? So he believed on the basis of faith that the car would be a great deal and that God was telling him which car to buy. But, you have to say that either, God's not a very good judge of the reliability of cars, or he wasn't hearing from God, or at least not hearing him right. So he had faith, but his belief turned out to be false. His belief being this is going to be a great car.
Maybe not to buy it.
Yeah, maybe God was telling him not to buy it, right? What's a true statement if it's different than what you can prove? So we've just established that a statement can be true without being provable. Yeah. I'm sorry, one of the two. So go ahead, you had your hand up first.
Well, I was just going to say truths can exist whether we have justifiable knowledge of them or not. Like I had breakfast this morning, that's a truth, but I can't justify it to anybody else here.
Good, that's a great example. So what does it mean to say that? This is what I'm going to get at. Way in the back.
Well, I was going to say actually to me, it seems like you can't exist without a justification. Like, how can you say something is true without saying it's true because of this?
Well,
you said Julius Caesar had breakfast. Well, how do you know that he had breakfast? Because he's a guy and he eats and you eat in the morning. So there's other truths that are associated with that truth, or to make that statement that Julius Caesar had breakfast the truth.
Well, okay, you can, there's a difference between, okay, there, let's see, somebody want to tackle that question? There's like a bunch of different.
I don't think anybody really cares whether Julius Caesar ate breakfast.
Okay, well, that's a different question, though. Like, we're talking about what truth is, like whether people care about it, probably not relevant.
Would you like to know what Professor Barlow is next?
Well, let's hold off of that. Yeah. You could say that. Like when somebody says, "Well, I personally believe," whatever it is.
But then, is it true?
It's just my Yeah, that's
because
what I.
If it's a personal belief, then how is it true?
But it's true to you.
It could be true to you.
Well, I'd say if it's true to you, then write it in your diary. But why are you bothering me with it? Because I'm interested in the truth, right? I want the big, I want what's actually true, not like your personal belief, whatever that is. Right. Well, I want to know what's impersonally true.
Like going back to the sky could be green for you, but to everyone else, the sky's blue.
When you say the sky is blue, and again, color is this kind of funny thing because color is the way that, I'll give you what I think my definition of color. Well, color is a description of two things. One, it's a certain wavelength of light, and the other thing is that's a certain experience people have in their minds. And so when you say something is blue, it's kind of ambiguous. It might mean someone's having a bluish experience, or it might mean someone is perceiving X, nanometer wavelength of light. And color is kind of a combination of the two. It's a vague term. So one of the things about truth is that you always have to define your term. And so once you define your terms, though, a statement is either true or it's false. It can't be both or neither. It's either true or false. Once you've qualified your terms, the problem with color is it's ambiguous between wavelength of light and subjective experience. But, when you say truth, it's personal. So if you believe that there is a Santa Claus, does that mean there is a Santa Claus?
It's kind of based on hearsay, though, because you make it real for the little kid, but you can't prove it to the little kid that he was actually there.
Or back on proof, but I thought we agreed that truth, that proof was something different than truth. Right, because something can be true without there being proof for it, even though he disagrees. is there a better example of something that's true is there a better example of something that's a truth that nobody knows? Are there truths that nobody knows? But yeah.
So what about the guy that walks up and he says, he's like big time Christian, and he says, I talked to God last night. We had a conversation about this, and that. Is that kind of what you're describing? It's like, how do you prove it to me? How do I know? It could be true for all I know.
I'm thinking more like, how many rings do I have on my key ring? I'm just thinking like something like yeah. I have no idea how many keys are in the ring in my pocket right now. I could guess, but I don't really know. And I don't think anybody else in the room knows how many keys are in there. I know my wife doesn't know. I know the department doesn't know because I put certain keys in this ring, so I have no idea. But there's some truth about how many rings are in my pocket. Now I could figure it out. Right now, if I pull out my key ring, before I pull out my key ring, is there a truth about how many keys are in my ring here? Is it going to change when I pull it out? Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. See, I thought there were four on here, but I forgot about my little cabinet key. So that's and that was just a guess, right? So there's five keys on my key ring. So that doesn't go from being true to false, or it doesn't obtain its truth value as soon as I realize how many keys there are. It was true before I took the keys out of my pocket. And it was true when I put the keys on the ring in the first place, even if I wasn't paying attention to how many were on there. Yeah.
But isn't there a justification behind the reason why it's true? There's keys in your pocket, so check them out the door.
But that's not justification for whether there how many keys are on my ring.
Yeah, but
though.
You can assume if I have a car, if I have a house, if I have to unlock the door. There's three keys.
But that's a reason why you have the keys. It's not a reason why there are five keys in the ring. It's not proof that there's five keys in the ring.
No, it's not, but there is just the keys behind the reason why it's true.
Yeah, but it's not relevant to how many keys are on my ring. If I wonder, like, is there a truth about how many keys on my ring? The answer is yes. Does that truth change, or does it come into being as soon as I know how many keys are in the ring? No, because truth is different from knowledge. Truth is different from justification.
So wait, does that mean truth is something that justifies itself?
Not necessarily. I think truth is entirely different from justification. Although, if you have justification, then that helps you know that something is true. But it's truth is something different than justification.
Right?
What's that?
So you see a smiling baby, that's true. That's
if the baby's really smiling.
Well, I don't know.
in the back here.
So
yeah.
A truth like somebody existed in the past. For instance, Jesus.
Right.
Like, we don't know if that's a fact or not. We have this manuscript that says this person existed, but all we really know is that it's a conditioned thought form that we've been programmed to believe that this person existed. So that's the justification of this supposed truth. We don't really know, though, if it's a true fact or not. All we have is this book to go by.
But you're only being skeptical because you're programmed to be skeptical.
This is true. This is true. And then, as I said, aren't all truths just conditioned perspectives?
There's five keys in a key ring, whether it's perspective of yours
or not. I would say no.
There's five keys there, whether we know it or not. That's true.
That seems like you're being overly skeptical about Jesus. I would say that the most historians would say Jesus is a historical person. Now, whether he's the Messiah and Son of God might be more controversial. But I also don't think that, you know, I don't think I'm programmed to believe the things that I believe. I think I come to my beliefs through independent judgment and thought. But that's, you know, opening up a whole new can of worms. So I want to come back to, like, what is truth, right? Pontius, coming back to Jesus, Pontius Pilate asked Jesus, what is truth? Yeah.
So is it like saying that as human beings, Homo sapiens, we must breathe air to live, and that's the truth?
That's the truth, sure.
Since if we didn't have it,
yeah, that's a true statement, right? So what is that true statement? And this coffee mug is purple, and it's a cloudy day outside, and these lights are fluorescents. And what all those things have in common?
They're true.
Yeah, but what makes them true?
Missions of awareness.
What makes those? Well, let's start with this. What sorts of things are true, right? So truth is...
Have you ever heard of the double slit experiment where the unwatched particles were reacting differently when they weren't being monitored?
Yeah, that sounds like an abstruse physics question.
You've heard of that though, right?
I have heard of that, right.
So when you monitor both
of them,
it's almost saying like it's only true like the way things happen are only true the way because you perceive them that way.
I don't think that's what that experiment shows.
Well,
we'll have to revisit that on Wednesday, right? We're going to come to that stuff later on. I want to come back to the sort of the basic question about when people say that something is true, what do they mean? What sorts of things are true? I mean, what sorts of things are true? Start with that.
Observable and things
verifiable.
What things
are reproducible?
Like, is this coffee mug? Is this coffee mug true or false?
True.
If I say the coffee mug is true, does that make any sense?
No.
So what sorts of things are true?
It is a coffee mug.
It is a coffee mug.
Descriptions about its data.
Okay, description.
It's yours.
Statements. There we go.
So.
Truth is a quality. It's a quality of certain things. Statements, beliefs, and we use the word propositions. Not the ones you give to the streetwalkers. Proposition is the abstract entity expressed by statements and beliefs. So a statement is something which is written or uttered, right? Written or uttered, spoken. A belief is something that's a mental representation. you know, you can have a belief without speaking it, without uttering it, without ever telling anybody about it. And then the propositions are the abstract thing, which is true or false, expressed by beliefs and statements. So, take the old standby, the cat is on the mat, right? So, suppose you have a cat, you have a mat, and you say the cat is on the mat. You look at the cat, you look at the mat, the cat is on the mat. You're like, okay, well, if you say the cat is on the mat, that's a statement, right? And if the cat really is on the mat, then it's a true statement. If you don't say anything, but you look at the cat on the mat and see the cat is on the mat, and you come to the belief, oh, look, the cat is on the mat, that's a belief. And it's a true belief if the cat really is on the mat. And then there's the proposition, the cat is on the mat, which is represented by, represented in the belief or the statement, or we say expressed by the belief or the statement, the cat is on the mat. And philosophers just talk about propositions to avoid, you know, the metaphysical statement of beliefs, or having to always talk about like what language the statement is made in, or whether the, you know, the language of the statement. It's like just the abstraction of the true or false thing is what a proposition is. And then you can also have people talk about sentences, which is sort of a sentences are a statement in a particular language. So, you know, le gâteau est sur le mat, or whatever in French, right? So that'd be the same statement except for in French. Different sentence, same statement. And so all these are the things that are true or false. Now the question is, you know, what makes them true or false? And there's two competing theories. One theory is that it corresponds with reality. So the philosopher Tarski is famous for saying, for our first philosopher maybe, Tarski. T-R-S-K-I. Tarski made the profound statement. The profound statement he made about statements was, the statement snow is white is true if and only if snow is white. Now, I'm not sure that's the best example. You know, snow can be kind of brown if it's on the interstate, or, you know, it might be yellow if somebody's been drinking beer all night. You know, it's... So, but the idea is to go back to the cat is on the mat. The statement the cat is on the mat is true if and only if the cat is on the mat. So what is truth? Truth is just corresponds with reality. When you make a statement, you're talking about what is. And if you look out in the world and the world differs from your statement, then it's not true. It's false. You made a mistake. You had a misperception. Or you know, people make mistakes, or it could be a lie. Well, by the way, what's the... go ahead.
Sorry, I guess I'm still confused how that's not proof.
Proof?
When it corresponds to reality.
Okay, so... suppose someone says the cat is on the mat, and they're in the other room, and I can't see the cat or the mat. That statement's either going to be true, or it's going to be false, before I look to see whether it's true or false. So it's going to have a truth value. Now I might not know what it is, but that's different from whether or not it's true or not. Because, put it another way, okay, if you ever had, like, speaking of cats, if you ever have, like, a cat, and the cat, like, sticks its head inside a box, and its, like, tail and hindquarters are sticking out, and it thinks it's invisible because it's all dark in there and it can't be seen, right? Okay, you should be smarter than that. Reality isn't like what you like perceive in your with your, you know, you can't stick your head in the box and make the world go away.
Ostriches.
And hide yourself. So what you want to do is proportion your beliefs according to the evidence of the senses in the world around you, so that what's in your mind matches up what's in the world. The world does not change according to what's in your mind. And again, this, I suppose you might, some people would say it's common sense, but then people say, oh, true for me, true for you, this is my personal belief, and so on, and get all confused again. So, So this is called the correspondence theory of truth, or sometimes known as the correct theory of truth. Correspondence theory of truth. Which is just that truth is that which corresponds with reality. Truth is what is. Falsity is what is not. And this is the way, if you do a little introspection, you see, you do this all the time. You don't like first get a belief about what's in your bank account and then spend accordingly, right?
Wouldn't that be nice?
You don't think that your belief determines the amount of money in your bank account, do you? Right? The amount of money in your bank account should determine what your belief is about how much money you have. Your gas gauge tells you how much gas is in your tank. If you take that, if you're like running low on gas, and you like break the glass there and take that needle and put it up on full again, is that going to help you get to where you need to go? No, that's like expecting the world to follow your beliefs. It's irrational. So your beliefs ought to be, you have to change your beliefs to match up with the world in as much as possible, not vice versa. So what do you think? Is that just common sense, or am I being dogmatic here? Is what I'm saying true? Yeah.
I'm a little confused with the value portion of it, because we're talking about the cat on the mat. So mm-hmm. I'm in the other room, somebody's telling me the cat's on the mat. Theoretically, the cat could run off the mat and then run back onto the mat again, right? So is that why you're stating that it would always be true? I guess I've got a little...
So you always have to, like, when you make a statement, language is very ambiguous, so you have to make a statement like the cat is now on the mat, or the cat is on the mat at, you know,
yes.
3:12 p.m. on.
So the value is always true, though, because of that. Is that?
Well, it's assumed, like, there's a lot of things you don't say. If you had to qualify every statement you made, if I said something like, if I were to say, call me later today, right? You know, and then I the next day I say, how come you didn't call me? And you said, well, it's good because it's not later. I'm like, well, it was later yesterday. And you say, well, it's not later now. I'm going to call you later today, just like you said. And I say, no, when I said that, it was yesterday. So later has to be indexed from yesterday, because that's when I called you to call me later. Right? You see what I mean? So, but if I were to have to say, call me by, 8 p.m. on Monday, January 9th, 2012, according to the Gregorian calendar, or if I'm just like, I mean, how much of it? Yeah, like it's a waste of time. So it's just sort of assume that if I say, call me later today, I mean today, and that statement isn't going to be applicable tomorrow because I told you today. So it's the same thing with the cat is on the mat. If you say the cat is on the mat and the cat leaves the mat, then the statement's no longer true. But it's still true that the cat was on the mat, at whatever time, at whatever place. And then you get to the point of, like, what does on the mat mean? And so you have some, you might have to get some criteria of, like, well, if the tail was off, or if it's 50% on, or, I mean, you'd have to have some criteria, right? And then, but once you have some criteria of what on the mat means, then the statement's either true or false. Yeah?
I think a better example could have been with the whole key thing. There was 5 keys on the ring, and that was a true statement.
Uh-huh.
We didn't know what that was until you pulled that out. It could have been anything on there.
Right.
But the truth was that there was 5 keys on that ring. And our proof to that fact was that once you pulled it out, everyone could see that there was 5. But before that, regardless of it being true or not, there were still 5 keys on that ring.
Regardless of being proven.
Excellently put.
Regardless of being proven or not.
Right.
The truth was that there was 5 keys on that ring.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Pay attention to that for the test. How many keys do I have in my pocket? In this pocket right here. At least 5, right? No, it's at least 5, yeah. Actually, I have a 6 key in there, so a separate ring. So, I mean, so there are certain things that you can't know. There's some things you can infer. Like, now here's an interesting thing about truth. Like, you might not be able to know how many keys are in my pocket, but you know something something about how many keys are in my pocket. You know I have at least 5 keys in there. So that's the truth about the keys in my pocket, although you don't know, like, the total. Okay, so truth is that which corresponds with reality. It's a quality that applies to statements, beliefs, and propositions such that if the statement accurately describes the world as it is, then it's true. If the statement describes the world in a way other than it is, then it's false. And then what justification, as distinct from truth, is the proof or the evidence. Something can be true whether we know it or not, or whether we have proof for it or not. Let's say, what's knowledge then?
Knowledge is what you know.
It's an accumulation of truths.
Okay. You can think things are very nice. That's full knowledge.
That's right. So knowledge.
All right, good.
Well, let me ask this question. Can you have false knowledge?
Yes.
Yes. You can think you know things that you think are true, but that doesn't mean they aren't.
Okay, but you said think you know things,
well, you
right?
Well, you know things that you think are true, but it doesn't mean they aren't.
You can know things that you think are true.
Like someone giving you bad directions?
If I, like if I say, if I tell you I know the capital of Oregon is Portland. Do I really know that?
No.
I don't know that, right? I might think I know it, but I don't really know it. So knowledge seems to imply that something's true. If you know something, part of knowing something, if you really do know it, is that it's actually true. But then that's like not like enough for it to be true, though, right? I mean, there's got to be something else. Like, just have, there's, because truth and knowledge are different. So I'll just... Our knowledge is truth plus something else, and it's the same here we've talked about. Stands around justification. So to know something means first that it's true, and second that you have a really good reason for believing it's true. So because you could be right by accident, right? So I could, if I say, you know, it's going to rain later today. Actually, look at the weather report. It said 50% chance of rain, right? So I can make the statement it's going to rain later tonight. And I have a 50-50 chance of being true. If I just looked at the weather report and saw a 50% chance of rain, you know, I don't really know whether it's going to rain or not. I can make the statement. And it could turn out that it rains later tonight, right? And say, aha, I was right. I knew it was going to rain. But I didn't really know it because I didn't have any proof of that. I didn't have any evidence for it. I might have just flipped a coin or something, right? So knowledge is truth plus justification. Yeah.
So that, however, if your chance of rain was 60%, you now have knowledge, right? Because you have truth plus the justification of a greater percentage than not that it'll rain.
That's a good question about whether that's sufficient justification. I say that I know. But at least you're.
It's not a democratic system.
Well, you raise a really interesting question, though, which is how much proof do you need before to make it enough? So you can say you know. Yeah. But I think so. It's pretty obvious that there's a distinction between, like, a wild guess or just being randomly right. Or sometimes you can get the right answer for the wrong reason, right? You could like do a math problem and like just totally lost and get the wrong answer by accident. So there's a difference between that and then like there's, you know, seeing your hand in front of your face, which is pretty obvious evidence. But then there's all this stuff in between. So the question is, how close do you have to be to there's a hand in front of my face, or, you know, what 2 and 2 is 4 to count as enough justification to say you know? And that's... I don't know, something we're going to be talking about later in the course. So, let's see, this week, make sure to pick up the book at the LCC Type Bookstore. I'll have the topics up later today, and hopefully you'll be able to post this evening, if not, try tomorrow morning. And I'll see you here on Wednesday. Read Chapter 1.